been a welcome introduction under any circumstances. It was especially timely this morning. I don't know about you, but I always need a minute to gather myself after Because He Lives. Again this year, we thank the organizers for this opportunity of reflection and restoration, renewal of our sense of duty, our sense of humility, our sense of faith. Again this year, we thank the organizers for a well-chosen theme to take us back, as Ed did, to the two greatest commandments of our faith and to the story which summons us to the highest duties to which our faith commands us. And so, I hope, like you, this assignment caused me to reflect on the parable and on its meaning. What does it mean to be a good Samaritan? Where does that impulse come from? And to me, what the book is telling us in that story has much to do not just with what the Good Samaritan did, but how and why. He did what he did on his own. He gave of himself. He didn't spot the injured traveler and rush back to Samaria to create a Department of Highway Rescue. He didn't rush back and tax 2 denarii away from his neighbors, with probably another couple for administrative costs. He gave of himself. This is the compassion that most impresses me, that I think is most deserving of the word. When we do things collectively, when we take from A to come to the A to B, this is quite often worthy and quite often good policy, but it is not the compassion to which we are called. And why did the Samaritan act as he did? To me, it makes such a difference that he sought no recognition or even repayment for the substance that he gave. In earlier words from Matthew, he sounded no trumpet. He was not among those hypocrites who give so that they may be honored by men. He did not let his left hand know what his right hand was doing. It has been said that whatever else you do, always try to do the duty nearest you. That day on the road to Jericho, this man found his duty near at hand and did it when no one would know, when no one would honor him, when no one would repay him, when no one else would help him do it. This, I think, is the instruction of the second of the two great commandments. Now, in the year since we met last, in case you didn't notice, 2007 was a big year for atheists. I don't know if they're having a breakfast to celebrate somewhere at this moment, but they'd be entitled to. By my count, and I may have missed some, at least 3 important books reached the New York Times bestseller list. They came with provocative names like The End of Faith, The God Delusion, and a number one bestseller, God Is Not Great. If you read them, and I have, you will find the contention that faith does grievous harm to this world. Elsewhere it is written that it is not just wrong, but deadly. These books are written in an era of intellectual superiority, condescension, disdain, contempt. Here and there, I thought I detected out-and-out hatred. The phrase that caught my attention among all the others was in that number one bestseller in which the author proudly announces, quote, "This is the atheist moment." When I read that, I thought, does he really know so little of history? Does he not know that this is a timeless argument, a timeless difference? Does he not know that we've just finished a century of atheist moments? A different author named Richard Dawkins wrote that, as he sees it, religion has been responsible for, quote, the worst of human atrocities. Well, tell it to the victims of Hitler. Tell it to the victims of Stalin, the victims of Mao, the victims of Pol Pot, atheists all, murderers of hundreds of millions. You see, cruelty and selfishness is always at the end of the atheist road. People of faith, sinners that we are, err, and sometimes horribly. But it doesn't flow from the logic of what we believe. Once one concludes that we are all just accidental protoplasm, that there is no higher authority to which we ought be obedient, then only the self matters. Only power over others matters. C.S. Lewis wrote, "When all that says it is good has been debunked, what says I want remains." I know that the authors of these books are sincere. They believe they have a formula that is superior for the human future. They believe that their mission is to liberate us from spiritual tyranny. A friend of mine in response wrote that this is like liberating a plant from the soil, a whale from the ocean. In this kind of freedom, something dies. What dies is the voice which summons us to the aid of our neighbor and to the love of our God. Those of us in this room who are temporarily tasked with public responsibility serve people of faith and those of no belief equally. We respect them equally. We must love them, whatever their view of us. There are many good people, good Samaritans, who reject the idea of any power larger than themselves. They would tell you that they serve their neighbor and do good deeds out of reason. It is simply wiser to organize society when people treat each other with care. Or that there are evolutionary instincts which lead us to cooperation. This is better for the success of the species long term. But there are far more powerful and far more prevalent biological urges that lead humans, fallen humans, to cruelty and to selfishness and to disregard of the neighbor in need on the road. The man on the road to Jericho was not responding to a biological urge. He didn't reason his way to the good deed that he did. He didn't say, "I will help this man and one day he will help me in return." He didn't say, "I will help this man or else maybe he will one day decide to harm me." The Good Samaritan answered to a voice in the heart. A voice placed there by a creator who loves us and instructs us to love each other. Not because it is in our self-interest, not because we have reasoned our way to this conclusion, but because it is right and it is just and it is as he wills it. I hope that the benefit of today and the words we're about to hear from a great Hoosier leader When that voice next speaks to each of us, we will listen a little more carefully, heed it a little more often. Bill and Gloria Gaither have been calling on their fellow citizens to heed that voice now for half a century. The list of their accomplishments is staggering. 8 Grammys, Gospel Music Association Songwriters of the Year 8 times. ASCAP's Songwriters of the Century across all genres. The Christian Booksellers Hall of Honor has only 4 plaques. The long-term chaplain of the United States Senate, Richard Halverson, Dr. Kenneth Taylor, author of the Living Bible, Billy Graham, and our next speaker. With all this success and all this achievement, the Gaithers still live with us in Alexandria, in the house in which they raised their children, in the way in which they raised those children, in the way in which they and their music have spoken to us, to the better angels of our nature now for 50 plus years. God bless you, Bill Gaither, and thank you for joining us this morning.